So this is the first ever Drinking Stories podcast. My name is Bill Freudenberg. I own beerlush.com. And this is?
Jackie Popovec, lead singer of the Vindies.
So, huge fan, and this is a rather ambitious first podcast to do. And I hope I don't stutter and stammer and sound like a fool, but I just want to jump in the deep end of the pool, grab you.
Let's go.
See how it goes. So, what I want to talk about first is basically music and relationships, because I just got out of a long-term relationship. And the first thing you go to is alcohol and music, if you're me or anyone that's German, Irish, or anyone else from around here. So that's what I went to, and I came upon some of your songs, the Vindies. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing music, amazing lyrics. So that's why I reached out to you, and I thought it'd be a really good idea to have this for the first podcast. So thank you very much for doing this and, you know, taking a leap of faith anyway.
My pleasure. I'm just glad that you went through it. We were talking about a little bit earlier how you were going through some of the songs. So it's really nice for when someone asks you in detail about what these songs are about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, your lyrics are amazing. What's crazy is, like, if the Vindies would have been around 20 years ago, there's no way in hell you'd be sitting with some asshole here from Youngstown and you'd be famous. You know, you got pipes on you, you have lyrics, you have a personality, and your musicians are amazing too. Like, it's so super tight. It really reminded me of the Wrecking Crew. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, wow. Thank you.
It was very, very tight. I was super, super impressed, very blown away. So, no, thank you. It's just a shame that, you know, we're in this world right now where it's hard to make money monetarily. And
you know,
music.
It can be looked at as a good thing, and it could be looked at as a bad thing. Yes, the music industry is not making as much money as it once was, but at the same time, we have this influx of bands that who otherwise would not be able to crack the glass ceiling that the big corporate guys.
Yeah.
Have controlled for such a long time. So right now, with kids making music in their basement and releasing it out, you know, every song is a lottery ticket kind of thing. So, you know, you just put your little bit out there to the world, put yourself out there, and you hope that it grows. And with us, you know, that's our goal really is just to make sure that we're always having fun and that we always like what we're doing. If we don't like it, then what's the point of it?
Right. Well, you said... that's pretty interesting. You said the kids now in lottery tickets, because there's so much, like, TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff is so short. So the attention spans are short. And then you have music like yours that's musically tight, lyrically awesome. But I think your average song that I listened to was probably like 3.5-4 minutes, where now...
It's actually 2 minutes and 30 seconds is like the average length of like a radio hit.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean. And that's great. And they're so, what you're saying is emotionally salient, and everything that's played right now is very vapid. So not only do you have time against you, you also have just what's in vogue. So you guys are really swimming upstream. It seems like you're doing awesome. It seems like you found your niche.
What we also, you know, with this particular album, I think more and more kids being on their phones and, you know, people watching bands on YouTube, what they're taking from that is sometimes more important, because they're sitting alone sometimes in their room and they're just like trying to figure out themselves and trying to, you know, search for things that they can relate to. So it is very important to make sure that the lyric is really good, to make sure that the music is really good. And I think that just based on impressions that we make every time we go out and play a live show or we put out a new song, I think that the impressions we're making is more important, because it's not – for us, I don't think it's just this it's not – fleeting, I don't think. I think it's lasting, as what I can gather when people listen to the music and have comments on it. They say, wow, this song really spoke to me, and I'll be listening to it all summer long. Or, you know, I've been listening to your album for the last year, and this song really spoke to me. So that's the most important thing. You wish that people can get something out of it that speaks to them and that they want to come back for more.
No, no, absolutely. And when I was listening to your music, it wasn't that there's so many layers to it. You can tell that you draw influences from the 60s and 70s R&B. There's just a lot of kind of standing on the shoulders of giants that you personify and you update it and make it modern, which is spectacular because you're probably opening up a lot of doors to kids, you know, that never heard something and now they're doing it. So they'll look back and see, okay, well, this sounds like this. And that just all goes into not only the lyrics, but again, how good your musicians are. And they're spectacular.
The way, thank you. The way that, it's funny that you mentioned that because the band, actually, that's how we started. Instead of, you know, forcing our own, you know, thing on people right away, we noticed that in Youngstown at the time, when we were just getting started, 2012, 13, 14, we noticed that there wasn't like a whole, like there wasn't this great big audience for original music. All they wanted was cover songs.
Right.
So instead of, you know, fighting that course, we said, you know what, we'll do this. However, we're going to make it our own thing. We took pop tunes, Miley Cyrus or I don't know, any pop band of the day, and we made it our own, Ariana Grande or whatever. But we jazzed it up, we bluesed it up, we made it a completely different sounding thing where people are like, I know that song, but it's also not sounding anything like I've heard it before. So we were really popular in making it our own thing. And then slowly but surely, that's when we started putting in our own original music a little bit at a time. And then people asked for more, so we put out an EP when Jim Chanot from The Summit back in the day, an Akron radio station that has, you know, done so much for us. Oh, yeah. They picked it up, started playing it, and that's how we got a huge following in Akron and Cleveland. And they also are in Youngstown now, too. So, but like the growth of the band definitely has to it's been a steady rise. It hasn't been overnight. We've definitely put in the hours, the 10,000 hours of work that, you know, goes into. I can remember the days that we played 3 or 4 hours a night, 2 to 3 times a week in the summertime. And now we're playing these great showcase shows where it's, you know, a power hour sort of thing. Yeah. So,
awesome.
Yeah. So I'm really grateful to this community, to Northeast Ohio for finally taking initiative and realizing how important that regional music is, local music is, and getting behind people. We just played the Youngstown Amphitheater for 1,100 people. Like, that was our biggest Vindy's ticketed show, and I couldn't be prouder of this.
Well, it's cool to get back to the Youngstown roots, too, because there's so many great musicians and everything that have came here. It's really nice to have a representation for this generation too. And I think you guys are a hell of a representation. So when you were talking about like the cover songs, that was super interesting because one of my favorite things to do is like to find a song that I love and like look at all the covers and just make an album like out of all the covers.
The covers.
Yeah, like Trouble in Mind, Changes, things like that. So what was your favorite cover song to play? Because I couldn't find any when I YouTubed you guys.
Let's see. I mean, once in a blue moon, we'll pull out Hall & Oates. I Can't Go For That, which we still do from time to time when we can't think of anything else to do and they want an encore or something. That's one of my favorites to go back to. And the way that we do it, we mix it up and, you know, put our own spin on it with horn section or a guitar solo or whatever. It's just a fun jam.
Right.
I like any jamming kind of song that we do. Yeah.
So when I was, you have all kinds of comparisons. Like when I was reading about you, obviously like Amy Winehouse, Adele, things like that. So who do you think you most represent like the evolution of?
I've definitely heard Adele, Amy Winehouse, which are amazing comparisons. Like those are like the biggest voices.
Right.
And I've definitely gone in down the rabbit holes of both of those vocalists. But and I've heard, you know, it's like an Amy Winehouse vocal on top of, with the horns on top of a rock band.
Yeah.
You know, so the mixture of the jazz and the rock definitely gets, you know, people get comparing us to those kind of bands. But I also, you know, I really can't pinpoint it myself, maybe just because I'm in it. Right. When people do tell me, you know, I sound like this or that, sometimes they'll say, you know, you sound like everyone and no one at the same time, which is really cool. But sometimes they say, you know, I hear a little Steven Tyler in you. I'm like,
oh, that's cool.
I don't usually say that, you know, like that he was one of my biggest influences, yeah. But he was. I mean, when I was growing up, I didn't have any neighborhood kids in the neighborhood, and my mom was just so annoyed of me, like bugging her all the time. So what she did is she got me a karaoke machine and had like 100 CDs of like American Standard music. And like, I just tore through every single big vocalist you could possibly think of, from Heart to Aerosmith to Celine Dion, Whitney Houston. I mean, I probably sang Frank Sinatra. I probably sang The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston probably about 500 times in one summer. And it was just like...
Who are you in front of? Like, what's...
It was my mother doing... Like, we were in the basement and my mom's like doing doing laundry and stuff, and she's like ironing my dad's shirts, and she's like, yeah, you didn't hit that note right, you should do it again. So like, and I was so mad every time like I didn't get it, so I just do it again and again and again until I could like absolutely mimic and copy these great big voices. And
that's awesome. So did you also like I'm guessing just the age range, you probably watch like their videos and stuff. Do you mimic like their stage movements or anything like that? Like people say that, what's his name from the Rolling Stones, lead singer, mimicked Marilyn Monroe. And that's how he gets like his gestures and stuff like that. And you mentioned Steven Tyler is like a big influence. Does that go into your stage presence?
That's a good question, because... probably, like, I grew up like a radio kid. Like, everything that I grew up with was just, you know, my parents only listened to. They didn't get into like deep cuts or anything. They were into Dave Matthews, Sheryl Crow, Queen, Supertramp, and my mother was into Selena. Like, it was just like all this pop music, which is great because it really taught me melody. However, that was the only thing I was listening to on the radio. We watched VH1 every single day. So I got all the music videos, you know, I watched everything. And the one that was very vivid in my mind is Peter Gabriel. And like that cartoonish, I can't remember what song that was, but where was I going with this? I was
stage presence.
Oh yeah. 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 So, I grew up dancing almost like boarding school, like hours after school, and my parents were like, as long as you keep up your grades you can keep dancing. And it was very expensive, and I did, I don't know, 12 to 14 hours a week, and I was just doing dance. I did jazz, I did ballet, I did hip-hop, and I just loved it so much. But when my parents divorced when I was like 13-14 years old, I had to quit because it got too expensive. Sure. And I totally understood. But that's when I picked up a guitar. And I didn't realize that, like, my love of dance was more related to my love of music and how I interpret the feeling of music. So, like, when I get up on stage now, people always talk about, like, the way that I move my body or my hands and, like, where does that come from? I swear to God, it's just me feeling it.
It seems very tribal. It seems very organic and tribal, like almost like a campfire, like a coriated campfire.
It's not. I mean, it's nothing that I don't think that I picked up from anyone, but maybe subconsciously. Yeah. But to me, honestly, I do truly feel it when I do stuff with my hands. This is not like a practiced thing. It's just coming through me. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Just channeling it.
Yeah.
That is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Steven Tyler and Aerosmith, and that just, I thought this was interesting because that's actually why I reached out to you, is because I was, after this breakup, like, I was thinking about that one song, What It Takes to Let You Go by Aerosmith. And there's that one lyric where it goes, there goes my girlfriend, there's another diamond ring, and all those late night promises, I guess they just don't mean a thing. And I can remember being like 12 years old and listening to that and thinking, you know what? That's so damn cool. I can't wait till I'm an adult and I can relate to that. And then the day you relate to that is the morning you don't want to wake up. Like, it's just like,
I mean, like the saddest day of your life. Did you speak this into a fruition when you were 12 years old?
Like, I believe so. I made it a reality.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Maybe I can speak other things into fruition.
No, yeah.
This is going to be a
millionaire podcast. Let's get a Grammy. Podcast. Like, yeah, just say exactly. The Vindys get a Grammy next year. It'd be great.
So, going back to your new album, Bugs, I loved it. I thought it was so super cool. It was like a Quentin Tarantino movie, though, to me. Like, I'm a huge fan of just hitting play and taking the ride and listening to everything.
Yeah.
So, your first song, Judas, is basically, to me, like, what resonated was, it was like a breakup song. And it was like the end of something. Like, Judas Kiss, like the end. And then it goes into other songs, which are love songs, like the one that you have where it talks about immediately meeting somebody and just diving in and jumping in. Like, that's spectacular. And then it goes to the middle of a relationship, and then you're back to being done. But then in between, there's some crazy shit that happens. Like, there's in between where it seems like a lot of ruckus.
It's not the first time someone has told me that I am everywhere as far as my songwriting. So that's totally cool. No, with this album, of course, you know, the Vindys we put out our first album, the LP Keep Going, in 2017. So when we wanted to put out this next album, it was 2020. We had recorded it in January and we decided that we were going to put it off until 2021. So during this time, I'm putting singles out there. I'm, you know, doing other projects. By the time that we actually released this album, July 31st, just recently, I had 3-4 years of songwriting that I had to sift through for this album. And for me, it's like, you know, I couldn't look at this album and say, oh, this is going to be this concept kind of album. It really was, I would say, a growth of my songwriting, because everyone knows that, you know, writing a second album is usually the hard part. You look at Billie Eilish, who came out with that hit album, and then she just put out another album, and people are already digging into it and saying, oh, this isn't as good as your first one. They always say that about the second one, second movie or whatever, right, you know? Yeah. And
unless it's Terminator 2, because that just kicked the shit out of Terminator 1. But yeah.
Or Godfather, right, you know, yeah. Too. Yeah. Yeah. So, and not that I fear that, because it's all growth to me, but it was just a growth period for me as a songwriter to kind of figure out where I was. And I, as a songwriter, don't ever like to write the same thing twice. So you're not going to hear... you might hear similar chord structures here and there, but I like to try and, you know, extend my legs out a little bit and just reach for things that I haven't done before, just because you don't know what's going to come out of, you know, getting a melody in, while you're driving in the car or in the shower, or you don't know if this one riff is going to inspire you to do this whole arrangement around just a guitar riff, you know. So I write differently all the time. I can write on top of a drum line. You know, I could write on top of a bass line. A keyboard sounds so different to me than an acoustic guitar. If I'm writing on acoustic guitar, you're going to get a little bit more of a Jackie country feel. Yeah. Or if it's going to be on keyboard, you're going to get more of a pop feel. I mean, I'm okay with that. I wish I had like more of a center sometimes, because I am a little bit everywhere, but it also keeps it interesting.
Well, it's kind of cool because you're just not like AC/DC, where it's just like the same thing constantly. Like, they're awesome, but yeah, we get it. Yeah. You know, yeah. we get it after 15 albums. So you said something that was interesting. You said, so this last album, you've sifted through 3 or 4 years of songwriting. Because my question was, because we talked earlier and you said that you've been in a relationship for 5 years. You've had a boyfriend for 5 years. And when I was listening to these lyrics, I was kind of curious, like, how that would all work out. Because, like, I'm an emotional train wreck. And if I was going out with a singer and they wrote the lyrics, you know, I hate you or whatever it is, like in Judas, I'd be like, oh, my God, is that about me? Or if you wrote the lyrics about just meeting someone, it's like, oh, my God, did she meet somebody 6 months ago? Is this about him? So, like, I mean, how does that dynamic work? Like, how's your writing process work? Do you disassociate yourself from the relationship? And then what's the reaction?
So my relationship now is with another songwriter. So he totally gets it. But I could see where if I wasn't in a musical relationship, the other person, I could see being like, what was that song about, huh?
Right, exactly.
I mean, I am so grateful to be... I mean, I always told myself, I am never going to date anyone in my band. I'm not going to do it. Never. Mm-mm, no. And then it just so happened that it just happened that way. So, yeah. So this relationship, we actually came together through music. And he wanted me to sing on his EP a year before we started dating. And we knew each other through music friends and everything. So, recorded, and then I got in a slump in between this writing a new album and my new album, which would go to be on the 2017 album Keep Going. I was in a slump already right before I wrote the first LP for the Vindies. So I'm like looking around for a co-writer, because I was the one that was writing all the music for the Vindies thus far. And so I sought him out a year later, and I was like, listen, I am, like, totally out of ideas. Can we start writing together? And I had looked through different friends of mine and everything. We started writing some stuff, and, like, 2 months later, we come out with, like, an entire country album. I don't know where we got that, but, like, I just felt like I needed to get through whatever I was going through by writing a different kind of genre, something that was not in my wheelhouse at all. So after that, I kind of... By not doing the Vindy stuff, something clicked in me that knew that, like, where I needed to go in the direction for the Vindy. So, you know, since that time, since we, like, after months and months of writing, it just happened. It happened. We were together, you know, we've been together for 5 years now. And he actually never asks me, like, what's that song about? Or this or that.
Well, he probably doesn't want you to ask him the same thing. So it's probably mutual. It's don't ask, don't tell. He's a smart guy.
I'll tell you, I conjure up, like, a lot of my previous relationships with guys in a lot of my music. But sometimes it's not even about, you know, my relationship. Sometimes my girlfriend will come up to me and tell me what's going on. And I've considered myself an empath. You know, yeah. I'm very empathetic towards my friends who, you know, go through something hard.
So you're almost like a character actor. Like someone will say something and then you just...
And I run it. With it. And I run
That's
with it.
That's super cool. That's awesome.
I mean, sometimes I think it does suck because, like, you want to be, you want to actually put yourself there. But as a songwriter, you have to also not be in that situation. For example, during 2020, I had the hardest time writing. I was like, this is perfect. I can write as much as I can. Like, you guys got to be so busy, right? The Vindies are writing a lot right now because you don't have any shows and yada, yada. And I'm like, I'd go, yeah, we're really busy, you know, but really I was just sitting at home and, like, crying inside and being completely desperate and
we all were.
Void. Like, I was in a black hole. I was completely depressed.
Is that because you weren't performing and, like, doing what you loved because someone was taken from you?
No, I just think like the shock of what was just actually happening in our society and also just, like, contemplating, like, you know, the situations that could go down, or, you know, my future. Like, do I want to be in this spot for the rest of my life? Or do I want to be doing, like, my day work, you know, every single day for the next 10 years or whatever? And I think I started freaking myself out so much. And I just got into this hole where, yeah, I was drinking a ton and I was not being productive at all. But I went through it. And I was just like, I think when things started opening back up, when we finally, you know, 2021 came around, I still was not feeling that great. But with the promise of a vaccine and everything, I started opening up a little bit more. And when you go through something, it's only afterwards that, as a songwriter, for me at least, that I can look back on it and realize, oh, I see what happened there, and I can write about it and what I was feeling. Because when you're in something, sometimes it's really hard to describe what is going on in your head.
So with your creative process, because a lot of people get creative when they drink and things like that. So for you, it was just more of a hole. And then when you got out of that, you're able to be more reflective. It was more of a master, not a servant.
Yeah. I was able to be more reflective and actually, like, not be so into it where I couldn't even fathom getting out of it. You know, sometimes as a writer, it's hard to, like, be in it, write something about it, or you do, you know, but for me, I prefer to be out of the hole, looking down in it and saying, oh, I see what went on there. And was that my fault, or was it their fault, or, you know, what actually happened mentally for you there? Like, that's how I prefer to look back on things and write about them after the fact.
Yeah, that's one thing about your lyrics is they're just, I mean, they are profound. And I don't mean to sound like campy or anything, but I think they're very relatable. They're excellent. So one question that I've always kind of wondered is, like, when you look at the most popular bands in history and the most popular songs in history, usually the most popular songs that in the top 40, if you put in top 1,000 songs ever, those songs were written when people were in their 20s. And what's so crazy is, like, no one listens to people in their 20s, but the same people in their 50s will listen to music written by people in their 20s. And I think we don't really respect a lot of, because there's so much going on. You know, you have so much hope. You have so much, there's just a lot going on in your 20s. And I think by the time you hit, like, your 50s and things like that, you forget, because that's our country's ran by a bunch of, you know, 65-year-olds and 7-year-olds, but they're all listening to music that was written by 20-year-olds, but then they don't give a shit about their opinion. So I was just kind of curious about your opinion of that, and, like, why do you think that there's so many great songs written by people in their 20s?
That's a really great point. I think that as you get older and you start making the decisions that create a very specific path in your life, and you realize what the rest of your the first half of your life compared to the last half, you start making these decisions, and little by little you see your window of what your life is going to look like in 20 years. As you get older, when you're, you know, 10, 15, 20 years old, you're still making all these wrong moves and decisions until you...
Or 40.
Yeah, or 40. But to your point, you know, why are we listening to, you know, writers that have written, I think, a masterpiece is when they're in their 20s. And I honestly think that because... I think that younger people feel more and they're more emotional, and they follow their heart more than they do when they're 40, 50, 60 years old.
Well, just like one of your lyrics too, they don't have their walls up. So I think they haven't been jaded as much and scarred as much. So they just put it out there. So
they're like,
that's
we're young.
Another good thing. Yeah.
It's okay. We can start over.
Just like when you're a kid and ride your bike and you scrape your knee. It's no big deal when you're 5, but when you're 55, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Your knee's done. For sure.
Yeah. So that's a really good point. So, back to your album Bugs. So those songs were all just an amalgamation. Were they planned? So it was just 3 to 4 years of like your cream of the crop, or did you want a theme? Because I got a theme from it. But then again, just like anything else, when you're listening to something, your mind like you project like what you want. You know what I mean? So I got a theme listening to it, but I don't know if that was your intention.
I think there was definitely a through line, and I only realized this after the fact. And the fact was that, you know, the album's called Bugs. What does that mean? For me, symbolically, as a songwriter, I am the kind of person that I write something because I'm bothered by it, or it bugs me,
right.
You know, or, you know, and I have to let it go. So once I write it, it's gone. Like, for me, I'm like, I don't have to, like, it's already memorialized in this song. Like, I'm good to let it go.
It's kind of like,
yeah, it's a therapy, kind of therapy for me. Literally, I actually had a bee infestation in my house that was like, yeah, it was horrible. Thousands of yellow jackets were about to like come down on my bed, and it was awful. So, but yeah, so that's why the album is called Bugs. And I do think that a little bit of that has transferred into every single song that I have written for the album. And that's why I was nervous for the title of the album, but also not at the same time, just like thinking that, you know what, it's okay, because this is my process, and I'm telling you my process in the title of the album.
Right.
So you can hear different moods of myself, but it's always about something that I need to get off of my chest. Always something I have to get, you know, let go, or, you know, get off my chest.
Yeah. So when I heard the song Bugs that's on the album, I thought it was about addiction.
Because
there's so many, you hear that all the time. There's Nathaniel Rateliff writes like about that same type of thing. So when I heard those lyrics, I thought it was a song about addiction. But again, it's whatever you project.
Yeah, it's actually a song about actual bees in my wall.
Okay.
But
well, that's a lot better than, you know, burning all your spoons in the kitchen.
I mean, I love that you just said that, though. Like, that is the purpose of why the idea behind that, they're in my walls, in my head, in my head. You know, you're bothered.
That's what addiction is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I definitely had a little bit of thought in that process as well about writing about that kind of thing as well. The through line is that, you know, it's about, you know, things that, you know, well, I want to get off my chest, and I'm not going to be afraid to say it the way I want to say it.
Yeah. So now that you've sifted through 3 or 4 years, what's the next album look like? Like, yeah, I mean, how does that come about? Like, do you think of like a theme, then go for it? Like, 'cause some comedians, like, something will happen, then they'll work, you know, 30 minutes off of that. So yeah. How's it work with you? Do you just get a bunch of songs and then try? Do you try to shoehorn another? So if you have a theme of like, let's just say, I don't know, addiction. So if you want to do a theme of addiction, you have 4 songs like that. Then do you try to, you have a melody and you're like, okay, I need 2 more songs. And you try to make a song about addiction about those 2 other songs, or do you just kind of let it flow?
I can't fight it, because the inspiration part of me, like, it always is different. So whatever I'm feeling is how it comes out. However, I'm trying to get another album out there soon. I have a lot of inspiration right now, and I actually have, this time I do have a very clear vision of what I want. And I'm not going to share it with you
now. That's fine.
But this is the first time that I definitely have a clear image of where I want to go next. So
you've never had that before?
I've never had that before.
So does that excite you, or does it kind of
scare
you?
It really excites me.
Yeah.
And scares me.
Yeah. Because if it fucks up, it's your vision that was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's always that way, though. Yeah. Well, you never know what hits.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. So the whole purpose of this podcast was drinking stories.
Oh, and by the way, the beer that we are drinking is very good.
Yeah. Birdfish Park IPA. They did an awesome job. They actually raised money to help get a Frisbee Golf Park made in the Firestone Park in Columbiana. They're awesome guys. Josh down there donated these beers generously.
Thanks, Josh.
What's that?
Thanks, Josh.
Oh, I thought I said, who's Josh? Because he was a big fan of yours. He had nothing but great things to say about you guys.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I'm doing this songwriter night over at Birdfish September 9th. It's kind of like, I organize it. It's a more organized version of an open mic night. It's $5 at the door. You just come in and just watch all these amazing, talented, original artists that come in and play their own music. So if you guys want to go there, Birdfish, September 9th, too. So I just started doing that. They're going really well. I really like the whole camaraderie of getting artists together writers together, songwriters.
Everything they do down there is top-notch. I mean, their beer is top-notch. Their bar is top-notch. I'm a huge, huge fan of those guys. I think it's probably the best beer in the Tri-County area is Birdfish. I'm a big fan of other ones like Noble Creature and stuff, but they're just Birdfish is always consistently there. And, I mean, I'm probably biased because I live right down the road from them, and I grew up in Columbiana Park and stuff like that. So definitely biased.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what drinking stories do you have that you want to share?
Okay, so... I didn't come in with the idea that I had to give you a drinking story, even though I think you had mentioned this at least four times.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
so I have to look up the lyrics. I just took a screenshot. So the one song that really did it for us in the beginning, as far as, you know, being on the radio in Akron, mm-hmm. at the Summit, and really being a fan favorite, was Red Wine.
Oh, that's my favorite.
And
I love that.
I got the lyrics right here. I'll read it through, you know, just real quick. I read Red Wine. He goes, when he asked me to go, I said no, didn't know that I'd miss him, so he moved to the city and I was to blame. So I moved to the bottle and drank him away. Red wine to get me through the night when we said goodbye to who we thought we knew. It's all right because I got my red wine. The night before he left, I laid in bed and he kissed me on my lip. He kissed me on my lips. They were stained in red. He left that morning and never looked back. He took that flight to JFK without turning back. I heard you're doing well these days as I lift the label off my spirit, and I hear New York's quite fine this time of year, but I can't bring myself to see it.
Spectacular.
That's Red Wine. And that is the only song I've ever written that was actually a situational narrative. And I sometimes don't like, I don't prefer to do a narrative like that. Just because I also want to have people to relate to it on a personal level. But people really gravitated towards the song. So maybe there will be another one in my future. But
well, that's really interesting. So on a personal level, you don't really write about that. So you do put yourself in character quite a bit then. Like we were talking about earlier. So you just step into these costumes, mm-hmm. and these roles.
Yeah. But there's definitely a little bit of me in everything that I do. I lied. There is one other song that I wrote about a dominatrix on the new album.
Okay.
But
on Bugs?
On Bugs.
Which one is that?
That one is Don't Tell Me, Just Love Me.
Oh, yeah.
So John Anthony came to me with this guitar riff, who is our lead guitarist. And I was like, just give it to me for a little bit and we'll figure it out. And I was like, you know, this is such a rockin', like, Jack White kind of vibey thing. I'm going to just do something that I don't usually do because I've never written with John before, ever. And he just gave me the song, and I was like, I'm going to put this story to it. So I met this dominatrix down in New Orleans who gave me her fan. It was like 110 degrees down there. And she's like, I'm from Cincinnati. I live like a couple blocks from here. We were in some like low lit. It's called the Dungeon. It was low lit, like red light district-y kind of bar. And I don't know what got us there, but we were there.
Okay.
And yeah. And she was so sweet, and she was She told us like she was from Cincinnati. She had loved what she did. She was a dominatrix and like she owned a badass flat like in the French Quarter, and like she doesn't drink. And I was like, what is your life? Like, this is so crazy that you're just like this responsible like dominatrix girl who's like killing it. I'm like, you're a boss lady. I was like, I love this so much, so I'm gonna write about it. So that's what that song is about. But Red Wine is from Keep Going, and that song is about my boyfriend who we broke up when I was at school for music production in Daytona State College down in Florida, and he was moving to New York City, and he invited me and I said no because I, you know, had family obligations back at home, and I was so heartbroken. Like, this is the love of my life. And I was so heartbroken that I said no, that I even said no and walked away from it. And when I got home, I immediately regretted it. And it just stuck with me. Like, you don't realize how painful things are until after the fact. Like, you know, when you rip the Band-Aid off, sometimes it's like, you know, still pussing or whatever.
How old were you at that point?
I was 22, 23 years old.
Okay. So then there it's even more exaggerated because that you know, that your emotions are crazy at 23 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And you would think that, like, you know, I have never been the person that has been lovey-dovey. Mm-hmm. I have never been the person that wants to, like, you know, this is my boyfriend. This is, you know, like, everybody look at, you know, our relationship and put
selfies on every meal.
Yeah, I don't like that. Right. I've just never been that person. And also, every guy that I meet, I'm like, get away from me. I'm like, you know, when this guy came into my life, he like made me love him. And like, it just like crushed me. Even when I said no, it crushed me that like I did that, you know, and I just like, you know, look back on it. And I still, like, every time I hear that song, I'm like, you know, that was about him. And I actually messaged him because he's a good friend. He's a friend of mine now and I've moved on. But I showed him when I wrote that song. He goes, that's a freaking badass song.
It is. He said frickin'?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why you guys aren't together, because he didn't say fucking.
But like, I think it's just like, you know, he was in the music industry too. He was a sound guy and like, yeah. So he went on and he did some cool things and, but like people in the music industry look at like art differently. I would say even, you know, artists, it doesn't have to be just music. It could be just, you know, you're a visual artist or, a journalist or, you know, video or whatever you do. It's just like you kind of have to put those the business side and the right. creative side and put that into perspective, because, you know, at least for me, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense, especially when you're so close to the situation. You look at it differently, you know what I mean? Just like you said, a painter's gonna look at a painting more critical than just a novice who can't paint. And you probably look at lyrics and like, what's that bullshit? You know what I mean? They're just phoning it in. So, like, I kind of think, like, Garth Brooks is obviously, like, super famous, you know, great musician, great performer. But I'm not a huge fan of him because I don't believe him. Like, Garth Brooks is, like, 2 + 2 = 4.
Mm.
Just like a comedian that figures out a formula. Mm. He's like, okay, set up punchline, then laugh.
Yeah.
I think Garth Brooks is kind of bullshit because he's just figured out the formula and went with it. Where if you play me some by Waylon Jennings that Kris Kristofferson wrote, my hair will stand up and I'll cry. Yeah. But Garth Brooks, you know, just phones it in. I mean, that doesn't phone it in, but he just figured out a formula and he plays to his bass. I don't think his heart's in it. I've never believed anything Garth Brooks ever sang.
That is, you know, that is, you could say that about many artists.
Oh,
you know, they figure out the formula and they're good because that's going to be paying their bills at the end of the month, you know, like, I just think that, if I don't believe it, my audience is not going to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes I even feel like, oh, you know, like I was not doing, I didn't do this show that great tonight, but I don't tell anybody that because I mean, I try as hard as I can to put myself out there, but sometimes you're just not feeling it, but you don't let other people know that because right. I can't stand when people put themselves down after a show because you don't know what you made someone else feel out there. Like exactly. This could, that could have been like their favorite concert or their best night, like with their friends that they had yeah. out. And like, and then if you go ahead and say like, yeah, that was the shittiest time that like on stage, I wasn't doing good with the sound. Like I couldn't hear or my voice or this or that. You just never know. So you don't put that out there. And
no,
the don't.
No, you're 1,000% correct. That's a very stoic philosophy. That's what Marcus Aurelius said. He said, don't complain ever, not even to yourself.
No,
you know, it just perpetuates.
You
it.
Do the best that you can under the circumstances you have. And yeah. then you just let it go. Like after that, do not blame yourself. Don't blame other people. Do not apologize for like, oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't that great. Right. This album that I put out was so bad. Like, no, don't do that to yourself.
Unless you're Eminem with that shitty Relapse album. That was terrible.
Oh, really?
Oh,
I have. Oh, my God. Every time I listen to Eminem, I always think about like we're talking about when I came into this thinking that we were talking about like, you know, memories of what music has done for us in our relationships and stuff. But every time I listen to Eminem, yeah. I think of my mother. I was in sixth. I was like, I don't know. I was like fourth grade. Okay. I brought home Eminem's first album ever, I think.
When you say Eminem and mother, this could take a very dark turn.
She took a steak knife to this burned CD that my girlfriend gave me of Eminem's, and she cut it up in front of me. I was like, Mom, why would you do that? And she's like, this man is the devil. And she like, it was so traumatic for me that I remember it so vividly. Man, yeah. So every time I think of that, I mean, that's a cool memory, I guess. Oh. But like, at the same time,
I love Eminem. Before I came here, I just listened to "Lose Yourself" over and over again. Just
really,
to build myself.
Lose Yourself. Yep. That's great.
Mom's Spaghetti.
I love it.
Yeah.
Did you really?
I swear to God, because I haven't done anything creative like this in a couple years. So I just wanted to, you know, you forget that you can do it, you know, because I've done stand up and shit like that. So, but until you're on stage, until the light comes on,
yeah,
you need, have butterflies.
So you need to get those butterflies.
So this is actually kind of a cool story. So right before I came here, I talked to a buddy of mine, Chris Renty. He just got out of prison after being there for 5 years. And when I knew him, he was, did you ever see the movie Rocky V?
I've watched all the Rockies, yes.
So Rocky V, he fights Tommy Morrison in that. So Tommy Morrison's son is Trey Lippe. So Trey Lippe boxes, and the very first fight that Trey Lippe had was against my buddy Chris Renty, and I sponsored that fight.
Wow.
And then he ended up going to prison, and now he's out, and he's going to have a spectacular career. I mean, he's still working his ass off. He's back in the gym. He's a badass guy, great guy. And so I called him, and I'm like, Chris, I said, I'm just kind of nervous because I haven't done this in a while and you're my last call. I know that if I talk to you, you'll give me like some good advice. He's like, Bill, he goes, it's just like if you don't have butterflies, you're not doing it right. He said, I know you, you've done your preparation, you're a smart guy, just get in there. And when that bell rings, just kick fucking ass. And that was, I mean, just a great guy.
I think the same way, about music too. It's like if I'm at a concert, like if I don't have the butterflies, I go, oh no, like what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Like I'm way too comfortable right now to go up there and be, you know, kicking ass. Like yeah. I have to get something. So I'll like bring a jump rope with me.
Oh really?
Yeah. I mean, the best thing to do before a concert, and I try, you know, to get everyone is to exercise, to be honest. I know that doesn't sound like you should, but if you're already in the mode of like having energy, there's like a wave that happens if you're playing a 2-hour show. It's that first half hour that you have, it's like running. Okay, that first mile is gonna like kick your butt, but then that second mile is gonna be a little bit easier. Third mile is gonna be a little bit easier, and you just get into a groove and then you just can't stop. And that's how we get on stage. So I like to try and jump rope before Not right before, like I'll go in right before I take a shower or something and get ready. But like if I work out that morning or that afternoon, I feel like I have a better time on stage. Like I'm better for stage.
I've never heard that. That's awesome. And I'm going to take this moment because how many times do you have a segue like jump roping? So interesting fact about me is I was the 1992 YMCA double dutch champion.
No, you were not.
Yes, I was. Co-ed too.
I'm so good at jump rope. We now have to have a competition.
I will destroy you. Even though I haven't done it in several years, they called me Willie Fast Feet.
Stop it.
They did not call me that, but I did win. They did not call me Willie Fast Feet. And just to preface it, Chris did not say kick fucking ass. He said it way more eloquently, but I just, you know, don't have time for that. So, well, hey, this has been really fun.
Thank you. Okay, before we go.
Okay.
I'm going to play interviewer.
Okay.
Because I thought a really cool, like, little game for the end of this would be.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Not like a game, but like, okay, I have a question for you.
I'm good at Family Feud.
Okay. All right. What is a band? Okay, let's say if you were in a relationship right now, what is a band that you would, if your significant other didn't like this band, like you would break up with them over? Oh.
I could give you a laundry list. I mean, there's not just one. Like I love music so much that, and I think it's important, you know, to have that kind of connection. Like we were talking about that on the way here. Like, you know, I think the goal, well, I mean, it's different for different people, but like at this point in my life, I want to move forward with someone who's going to be my best friend and have memories. So for me, music is super attached with memories. So if somebody did not like, I mean, I'll do broad strokes with a paintbrush here. Johnny Cash is kind of a non-negotiable. I mean, if you don't like Johnny Cash, you're just like a pure asshole. That's like someone who doesn't like dogs, because Johnny Cash has something for everybody. Even if you don't like country, his older stuff with Rick Rubin is fucking amazing. If you don't like Johnny Cash, to me, it's like you don't like dogs, and I want zero to do with you. Zero.
Okay.
So Johnny Cash would be one. Tom Waits would probably be another. I'm a huge Tom Waits fan.
Okay.
Because when you listen to like his lyrics and how he's influenced people,
a great songwriter.
Spectacular. I mean, yeah. Norah Jones and Willie Nelson is another one. Love Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson, yeah.
Jerry Lee Lewis. Jerry Lee Lewis had so many spectacular songs, and he was you can't say underrated because obviously like he was super popular, but when you listen to Last Man Standing, that's one of the greatest albums that's came out in the last 15 years, and everyone collaborated on it, but no one talks about it. Like, Last Man Standing, Jerry Lee Lewis is absolutely spectacular. And then from there, you know, I love Metallica, but if you don't get Metallica, like, I get it. But that's not a non-negotiable. But I'd say my non-negotiables would probably have to be like Tom Waits, Jerry Lee Lewis. I'm a big Kris Kristofferson fan. Blaze Foley is probably another one. Blaze Foley, a lot of people never heard of him, but every time I play his music, people just fall in love. Do you know him at
all? I'm writing it down right now. No, I didn't. Blaze.
Well, wait till you hear this
Blaze
story.
Foley.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's spectacular. He was murdered, and he never got to be famous, but Merle Haggard recorded his songs, and Gerf Morlix is good friends of his. I don't know if you ever heard of Gerf. He's spectacular. He played with Lucinda Williams.
Okay.
So Lucinda Williams Lucinda Williams, that song Drunken Angel,
yeah,
is about Blaze Foley.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
I'll look up Blaze Foley.
Absolutely love him. Yep.
I mean, that was a great list of people, obviously, but I would say like my band would be if someone it just like
I was gonna say the Vindies also. You didn't let me finish. I took a drink of beer, and then I was gonna say the Vindies. If they don't like the Vindies, fuck them.
That's true. Okay, I'll say if they don't like the Vindies, fuck them, and then the Beatles, I would say, but that's just like dogs.
I mean, that's. I like the Beatles, love their music. I just have a really hard time, and this goes back to like Hitler's paintings. Like, Hitler's an awesome artist. I have a really hard time with how John Lennon treated his family and how he beat women. Like, that really just bothers me. So every time I hear that, like...
This is news to me.
Oh, really? Yeah, he was kind of mean to his ex-wife and his first son. Kind of an asshole. So every time I hear, even though it's brilliant and amazing, I think maybe that's why subconsciously I've always been more of a Stones guy. I think Exile on Main Street is probably the best rock album ever.
I mean, okay.
You do have to disassociate because everyone, I mean, look at Led Zeppelin. I mean, look at all these. And that's one thing where...
I know. I heard about that, too, with Led Zeppelin.
Like, when you think about it...
Bob Dylan!
Yeah. So the Me Too movement totally missed rock and roll. Like, nobody canceled anyone in rock because if you go back... Like, look at the 1980s. Here we're coming to town. Lock up your daughters. Like, that was the whole mantra for Motley Crue and all these people. It was just, you know, banging, 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 and it doesn't matter. So... This got off to a weird
know.
Track, but it's interesting. Like when you think about it, like so you have your actors and you have your movie stars, but rock artists, because I think it was just so socially accepted, they didn't give a shit, and so they never got canceled.
Not even really talked about. People are still listening to Michael Jackson and
right, yeah. What'd he do?
I don't know. I don't know.
I've just heard rumors.
There's just rumors.
But yeah, I mean that's the same. Thriller. I mean, Dave Chappelle said it. How you know, Thriller's amazing. You know, you can't get paid. But I think that's because you have an emotional connection with music.
You have to disassociate sometimes. And I think about this too. Like sometimes I'm like, I love this artist so much that I would never, ever, ever want to meet them because
right. They
seem like douchebags.
Right.
Like you don't want to meet them. Like that will ruin everything. Like don't put them on a documentary. I don't want to see their videos of them talking in interviews. I just want to hear the music and that's it.
But I think it goes back to like attention spans and snippets and things like that and how emotionally salient music is. So you have a 3-minute song and you just vibe to it and love it where Kevin Spacey, for example, I've always thought he was an asshole, but people love all those movies and things and he's canceled. So I'm not going to, you know, I don't have to watch Usual Suspects. It's a great movie, but I don't have to watch it. But I do love the Beatles. I do love Michael Jackson. And when they came on, you know, I turned the radio up. You know, but it's in the back of your mind. But I just think you have such an emotional connection. And I think it goes back to...
Some people can't. Like, there's a line for people, and that's it.
You want to hear something funny? So you heard what happened with CeeLo, right? So
no.
CeeLo supposedly like drugged a woman and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard
so,
about this.
So then, like I've always thought about this, but I never wrote it down or anything. I thought this was like a funny thought. So you know his song Crazy?
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
But when you listen to the lyrics, like if you put somebody who had like a super deep voice and just was reading that as an actor and you read those lyrics, I think, you know, you'd be like, oh my God, what's this fucking guy doing?
I gotta look up the lyrics now.
Look up the lyrics real quick because, and then say them in like a deep voice. Say it in a creepy
hold
deep
on,
voice.
Hold on. I'm gonna do it right now. I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. I just hear the music in my head. And I hope you are having the time of your life. But
wait,
twice.
You know what? This is my mistake. I don't mean crazy. I mean fuck you. His song, fuck you. So that
what?
Was totally my fault.
Oh, isn't that? I was going to say, what is so crazy about that?
Absolutely nothing. Because when you were saying it, I'm like, you know what? What the hell was I thinking? But no, it's a
fuck you.
Okay, so do the same thing, but with that song.
All right, hold on, we're gonna do it, and you can edit all of this.
No, it's all. Gold.
I see you driving around. I feel like you need to do this because I don't have like a creepy voice. Do it. You do it.
My voice is higher than yours. I have like the most.
I don't have like a manly.
Voice,
here we go.
Much more than
I
me.
See you driving around town with the girl I love, and I'm like, fuck you. I guess the change in my pocket wasn't enough. And I'm like, fuck you and fuck her too. I said, if I was richer, I'd still be with you. Ha! Now, ain't that some shit? Ain't that some shit?
Creepy.
And although there was pain in my chest, I still wish you the best with a fuck you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not someone you want dating your daughter.
But it's like, so fuck you.
Right, yeah. It's all how you say it. That guy, okay, you're a pleasant creep. But when you say it like that, it's
all right.
Super creepy.
Okay, so we know you're a Stones fan and I'm a Beatles fan, and I have arguments for both. Well, just before we move on, because I have one more question.
Sure.
The Stones are great, but I do have a problem with them.
That they're all still alive?
No, I've been trying to see them for years, and they keep canceling. Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah. But they will cancel again on me. This will be the third time that they canceled on me if they do cancel. So I have tickets. I was going to go see them in Cleveland. They canceled on me. They were at Jazz Fest 2 years ago. They canceled on me again because he had heart issues and he had to do surgery. So, like, I've been trying to see them forever. I am a big Stones fan. Okay. But who is the one that revolutionized music? I think it was the Beatles. Like, they were completely original to me. The Stones took American music mm-hmm. and made it their own. Yeah, I love that. But, like... Yeah. I like them for two different reasons. Who are the cool kids? Rolling Stones. Who are the, you know, the guys who made something new? The Beatles. And so there's two arguments for both.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great argument. It goes back to the old commercial. I don't know if you remember this or not, but remember the BASF commercial? We didn't make blah, blah, blah. We made it better. Mm-hmm. That's the Rolling Stones. They didn't make blah, blah, blah. They made it better. Like, again, I go back to Exile on Main Street. It's like one of the, it's a perfect album. It has everything on it. It has some country, it has some blues, it has some twang, it has some rock. It has, you know, all that appeal and all that raw power. Where with the, in my opinion, the Beatles, it's all theme based. You know what I mean? You have to be in a certain mood to listen to the White Album. Mm-hmm. You have to be in a certain mood to listen to Rubber Soul.
Mm-hmm.
But with Exile and what's one?
You can throw it on.
My mile on. Yeah, I mean, anytime. They're just spectacular, and it'll elevate everyone's mood. Where the Beatles is all just they're flatline. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get a party going.
No. It's almost like math sometimes while you're listening to it.
Everyone's talking. Sympathy for the Devil, Monkey Man.
I'll give it up to the Beatles, but I am going to be dating Keith Richards. You know, kind of thing. Like, that's where I'm at. So that's where I sit in between them. Last question, which is on the opposite end of what I just asked you. Hold on. Oh, I was going to say, okay, so I just asked what is the band that you would break up with someone over?
I wouldn't even go out with them if they didn't like them.
Right. Now, so you mentioned if they didn't like Johnny Cash, you'd be done. But if they liked this particular band,
mm-hmm.
you would break up with them.
Oh, okay.
So this is the opposite. So name someone who if your girlfriend was like, I am obsessed with this band. And you have to like them too. You'd be like, I can't.
Anything polka? Like if they're obsessed with polka. But what? If that's all they played? No.
Yeah. Okay. You're talking about a full genre. I'm talking about like, okay. Let's like talk about.
I don't know any polka bands. That's why. Okay. But yeah. If they just constantly played polka.
Like, do you know anybody that likes polka? Who's like jamming a polka in their truck or like in their car?
My grandmother's amazingly irritated. I'd never date her.
Well, you don't have to worry about. Unless you're, you know, dating your grandmother's friends.
All right, so let's see. No, they've all turned me down. I think I'm charming, but they just maybe it's because I don't like polka. My feet just can't stop tapping to it. Fast Feet Willie looks super AIDS-y if all he was doing was like listening to polka. So, oh my God, that's a good question.
All right, for me.
Okay.
I just watched this movie last night. I don't know if you have HBO, but. Look it up.
Not to brag, but I do and Stars and Showtime. So
Woodstock 99.
I've seen that.
Okay. I would say especially after watching this movie, but also before and after, Limp Bizkit.
Really?
Like if someone really like was into Limp Bizkit, I'd say no. Because
that's kind of a canned answer. Like he was so hated. He had some great songs though. Like I don't know anyone who's super into him, but he did get a lot of shit. Like the Blue Eyes song he did was good. The one with Method Man he did was good.
Okay,
they're not terrible
at all.
But
there is something.
He got a lot of shit.
There is something about like the bro fest that was that Woodstock '99.
But that's an era. That's an era you don't like, not a band.
Yeah, but were they popular in any other era? It's not like they transcended that time. They were like in that pocket there, and they never did anything else after that.
No, I mean, that's fair enough. But I mean, it's not their fault that they were bro culture. You know what I mean? That was just so he had.
I don't think that I won't blame the riots that happened on them, maybe, but I will like say that I would not date anyone that was a part of that.
But when you say so, how into them are they? Like, they listen to them constantly? Or like, what's
the criteria? Oh, if someone was like, that is my band, that's the only band I listen to, like, that would be a problem to me. Like, that's who I run to. That's who I work out to. Like, if they're, like, freaking doing, you know, leg presses with Limp Bizkit, I'm sorry. No. That's not my guy. I'm not there.
So you're not a Yankees fan, then?
What does that mean?
Because he always had that stupid redheaded cap.
Oh, that Yankees. Does. I mean, he was. There's the Yankees are much more popular than okay. Limp Bizkit.
311.
311.
Super irritating.
Like, okay. All right.
I just don't get it. I don't like all this stupid alien shit. I don't like all their weirdo fans with other drug references constantly. We get it. You like marijuana, and then you like ecstasy. We get it.
That's so you don't like into. Sublime?
I love Sublime.
What?
Sublime's one of my favorite bands.
Okay.
That's a totally different vibe. No.
They don't talk about marijuana?
They talk about marijuana. Marijuana's not the thing, but that's the whole culture with 311 fans is marijuana and ecstasy, where Sublime can talk about it, although everyone talks about it, Stones, everybody. Sublime is spectacular. That reggae vibe, I don't think anyone's ever done that fusion better than Sublime at all. Especially their earlier albums and their acoustic album. They're amazingly, amazingly
Those
underrated.
Lyrics are amazing.
Yeah.
The lyrics are great.
And that's not, was he in the 27 Club or was he 26?
He was young.
And he was super young.
But the band is like still out there playing. Whoever Rome. Wants to
yeah,
do.
Rome.
Yeah.
And they're doing one in Nelson's Ledges. They're about
soon?
To have, yeah. Well, Badfish is. Like they're, they're a big cover band.
Yeah.
And that'll be a bunch of 311 fans just going there, smoking their drugs and doing their ecstasies. But
so how many of your fans are Limp Bizkit fans then?
My fans?
Yeah.
I probably have zero fans. Okay. So probably zero out of zero. I have no clue.
So I was like, how many people am I alienating?
Yeah, I mean.
You were defending them for a little bit.
Well, so. I grew up in that era.
Well, yeah. I wore
Jankos. Not super wide Jankos, but nice Jankos.
Let me tell you about this movie, this Woodstock 99. Did you hear about what happened there?
I lived it.
You were there or you heard on MTV and stuff?
I don't want to brag, but not only do I have HBO and Showtime and Stars, but I also subscribe to the Rolling Stones.
Okay. So you're up on it.
You're right.
Well, I had no idea. Because at that time I was 99. I was 8 years old. Okay. So the people that I had looked up to, and I get this like culture vibe that was going on in 99, which was the teenagers of the time were really angsty and upset that music was going into this world of like pop singers boy bands, and they were taking over the corporate world while actual rock and roll was being left on the wayside with MTV.
Right.
Like, they were upset that MTV took away their music. You know, I get that. And I see where, like, it's like MTV went and put and gave music to their little the teenager's little sister. You know,
1000%.
Because then I started watching MTV when I was like 12, 13, 14.
I was 18 in 99. So I remember it vividly. Like I was right there at your peak MTV age.
This is the time of Spring Breakers. This is the time where Girls Gone Wild. This is the time of like Daytona Beach was still a thing then, you know. And
those
like,
are all things like you mentioned Girls Gone Wild. My God, those were infomercials that were on like regular cable.
Yeah, they
and
were.
And now, I mean,
you would never see that now.
Well, I mean, you shouldn't. I mean, that was kind of pervy and creepy, but it's just like weird how much stuff that
I know. This is the time. Bill Clinton got in trouble with the impeachment at this time. This is like this is ish. You know, it's like this was like a very misogynistic kind of time.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
So,
but it seemed like everyone was cool with it. Like yeah, there wasn't like a pushback, and they also had the they had fans.
Did you know that dozens and dozens of women got raped at Woodstock 99?
Oh yeah, I mean,
people, the girls were topless all over the board. I mean, it was so dirty and so unorganized. You would think that it would be more organized than it was, but you know, I get that, like, they should have never had a Woodstock 99. They didn't have a purpose for doing that. It's 60. Money. The Woodstock, exactly, that's what it was. Woodstock 69 was about love and peace and being against the Vietnam War. And this one, they were just doing it for nostalgic purposes. Who, these kids don't even know who the Doors were or who Janis Joplin was. Yeah. So, like, they were just doing it out of their own nostalgic weirdness and just money and greed that they, you know, charged $4 or $5 for water and stuff. Yeah, exactly. It was mind blowing. I recommend everybody to go see that movie because it was crazy. It's on HBO. But I don't know where we're going with this, but this is fun.
Cool conversation though.
Yeah. But it is. Right. That was your. That was kind of your. It's funny because, yeah, that's your generation.
Yeah.
Look, like, you were the kids that I looked up to, and I was like, what are they doing?
So basically you're saying that I helped create the Vindys.
There you go.
In a way. I can remember, so in 2000, I was running around with this girl that worked at Ticketmaster, because back then you just had flip phones and everything. There was no real internet.
Call Ticketmaster?
No, you couldn't, because there was no like thing. So you had to wait in line to get tickets, and Giant Eagle
at Oasis
them.
And like
Oasis
yeah.
and Giant Eagle and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I was running around with this girl who worked there. So she had a line in on, you know, to get tickets, and MTV had these things called $2 concerts at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So for only $2, you can see different bands. They sold out like immediately, obviously, because, you know, it's only $2 and you go to Cleveland and see these awesome bands. So I saw a couple there. I saw Limp Bizkit. Not Limp Bizkit. sorry, that was on my mind. Linkin Park.
Linkin Park, okay. Yep.
So this is a quasi-funny story. So we go in there, and we drive up there with, you know, roadies and everything. So we're all tanked. And we get in there. It's taking Linkin Park forever to get on the stage.
You're going to keep saying Limp Bizkit.
I am, because you got that in my mind. So it's taking them forever to get on stage. And so I light up a cigarette, because that's, you know, it's 2000. It's 20 years ago. Like, everyone's smoking. And then so one of the roadies gets on stage. He's like, Linkin Park isn't coming out until the assholes smoking cigarettes, you know, put them out. So I got to smoke.
Was this outside?
No, it was inside.
Oh,
It was inside. I mean, I guess we weren't supposed to.
Okay.
And then I ended up getting thrown out because some girl got on top of my shoulders, and the security just threw us out after that. But
this was even 20 years ago?
It was 2000, because it was 2000 concert series.
Oh, wow.
You can watch. I mean, MTV has it somewhere. I remember seeing myself on there. You can see the girl like on my, you know, on top of me, you know, just bouncing around. It was great times.
Yeah.
So we got thrown out. And
I imagine Linkin Park concerts were pretty bro-y too.
No, they really weren't, because you have to think that wasn't really, I mean, it's bro-y, yes, but everyone was kind of in on the joke. Like, I never liked Linkin Park at all. I was just like, you know what? It's in Cleveland. We're gonna go up there.
I actually
hammered.
Like Linkin Park.
I don't know. I just don't. Their fusion. I think Limp Bizkit did it better.
Okay.
Like, fusion wise.
All right. Now so I'm gonna have to figure this out. Limp Bizkit or Linkin Park. Who do you have to choose from?
Burr, 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 burr. I mean, like, I don't know. I'm just not a Linkin Park guy.
Become so numb.
just the angst in that, and like you could feel the teenage angst, and I can when you sang that lyric, I can smell him. Like, I know exactly what he smells like. He smells like really weird sweat and Aspen cologne back then.
Interesting.
Yep. That's what it was. And
okay.
He's wearing his JNCO jeans.
In case anyone was wondering out there what Linkin Park smells like.
I promise you, that's what it was.
I love this conversation. Can we do this again?
Oh, I'd love to. Well, hey, thank you very much. It was awesome.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you. All right. Ta-da.
What'd you think?
Brilliant.
He wasn't listening to it.